It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will. But then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
If it looks weird, I got my hair cut.
I did notice that, yeah.
Maybe since Thanksgiving.
Your beard trimmed.
I got my beard trimmed to a level I don't enjoy. I trimmed the beard right before I went because my stylist can get confused of like where the sideburns end and the beard. So I try and keep it trim within a week or so of when I've gone there. And I happened to do it the day of. And my old beard trimmer, the guard just slipped. And I was like, "Rit." And then it was very short. And I was like, well, I guess all of it's going to be this short. Trish is even noticing, and Trish never notices when I change my hair, but a lot of this gray stuff usually kind of covers this. So in general, I have more dark going right now when it's short, but I don't care for it at all. But it grows, so it'll come back. Also, this is not how we should start a podcast. All right. Hi, everyone. I'm Tony. This is William. You may know us from podcasts. And we like to have a lot of fun and a lot of goofs here on podcast. But you know what's not fun is lying, manipulating, deception, being dishonest. And while we always strive here at podcast to bring you the most truth, the best truth, the biggest truth, sometimes we stumble and we don't do nearly as extensive of research as we needed to do before we said those things. And when that happens, we just want to make clear to you the mistakes we've made and own that so we can all move forward with a better understanding. To that end, on a previous episode, one of our hosts may have explicitly implied that no change.org petition has ever had a practical impact on anything ever in the history of change.org and its petitions. We here as a production company have since learned via our highly skilled staff of researchers that actually a change.org petition was instrumental in the return of the Mexican pizza at the fast food chain Taco Bell. So we now want to make clear that we do understand that change.org has the capacity to do something, and that something is bring back the Mexican pizza. So we promise to listen better and think before we speak, and just in general try and give you a better, more podcast. Thank you and God bless. Hello everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world that can create genuine biblical miracles. If we want to, you just have to be nice enough to us. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 728, Mexican Pizza from Taco Bell. Is a real thing?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
I
didn't know that.
This is why I love you, William. This is why I love you. That whole thing, which had conservatively like 27 different weird chinks in it that you could have just pried at as you're open, and you went for Taco Bell has a thing called the Mexican pizza.
Yeah, I didn't like, know.
That's the most William ass thing you've ever said. Yes. And to be fair, I've never had it.
Okay.
But I know of its existence. Someone who loves it. Well, this is like asking someone from Florida to explain Happy Joe's Taco Pizza. It can't be done. But it is basically two, I assume tostada shells,
Okay.
and then they put beef in them, and then on the top they put cheese. It's kind of just like a fancy tostada that makes it look like pizza, but it is two shells, and I know there's meat in between,
Okay.
and then melted stuff on top. And I always thought it seemed dumb, and never ordered it. And it also is like one of the bigger things. And in general, what I always liked about Taco Bell is you could get lots of little cheap stuff.
Oh,
So I didn't
right.
want to get anything that was called a grande something or whatever.
Right.
So I never bothered. And so I never really noticed when it went away until some time after it went away, the internet created a community of like, what the fuck? Why is the Mexican pizza gone? And I recently learned in a video about, or actually, I've seen a couple things recently about the history of Taco Bell. The history of Taco Bell is kind of interesting. But there was a change.org petition, and it successfully brought back the Mexican pizza. I don't know if it was for a limited time or if it's permanent, because again, never really cared. Yeah, so I was like, wow, change.org did something. More, I mean, don't get me wrong, change.org has value within our society. The only claim I ever really have made is the value is equal to just screaming things you're mad about into an empty Pringles can. Like that, there's a therapeutic psychological value, but that in my experience was it. But now I'm wrong. It doubles as a place where you can scream into an empty Pringles can and bring back the Mexican pizza at Taco Bell. So, win win.
Okay. Win-win.
Change.org has is it it is it is many things to many people,
Yeah.
and none of them to me.
Okay. I don't remember you making, I presume you're the one that said all this stuff about change.org. I don't remember ever us even
Yes.
talking about
I don't even remember
it.
what it was now, but the concept of a change.org position related to whatever we were talking about came up, and I was like, that won't do anything because change.org would never do anything. And you're like, oh no, sometimes. And I was like, no. Tell me of any instance where a change.org position practically had an impact on the world. And I believe you could not come up with any at the time. And I certainly couldn't.
Well,
But now I know.
I recall, and I must have recalled at the time, news articles that talked about, well, change.org petition did this. I couldn't remember
Oh
what
yeah.
they were, but I must have
Well,
heard
they
of them.
report on that they exist all the time,
Oh,
though.
but you don't believe it. You don't
No,
usually
they
believe it.
report no, they report that there are change.org petitions and that
No.
this many people I have never encountered a thing Taco Bell notwithstanding
Oh
where
no,
they're like, that's why we did
I've
it.
seen news articles about a change.org petition making something happen, is what I'm
All
saying.
right. Well, as per
I don't remember
usual on
what
podcast, I don't ever believe William. So if you
though.
know of a
Right.
change.org petition that made a difference that we can actually verify, let us know about it on the blog, themagicaldogginghat.com. Also, even more fun, if you can just prove that William's a big liar, I would love that. I would love that. So do that. So for those of you just joining us, you're not going to figure out what this show's about. Don't worry about it. How's your week been?
Well, let's see. My birthday, by the time people see this, it's going to be pretty far away. But for the sake of our conversation, I have my birthday. So that was nice.
Yeah, it was pretty far away now.
Yeah, it's several days ago.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
This
What
isn't a
else?
bit, by the way, people. I literally have not spoken to him since before his birthday, since the last time. I said nothing. That's the kind of friend I am. And I don't apologize for it because William has been on this train ride long enough to know how bumpy it gets. So,
Correct. No big deal.
although I do have a present that's been floating around in my head that I guess I could have given you for your birthday, but I'll probably do it soon, but I don't know. We'll see.
Okay, that's nice. Let's see. I can't think of anything we, I mean, we mostly haven't been watching anything that's like worth mentioning. I mean, you know, you'd think, oh, my birthday, we're going to do several different things and celebrate, maybe see a movie or two, but we didn't really do that. And it was, there was snow and stuff all over that past week. So some of the plans we had didn't happen because of the snow. So
between the snow and a holiday and President's Day and stuff, and also me just getting old, Trish ended up staying home for like almost a full week, even though the snowstorm was like one day.
But it was, it's been very relaxing, I guess you could say. I mean, you know, with, because that's the great thing about nowadays. So when I was younger, if nothing was going on, that was like not good. Like, it's not that I got bored, but it's like I usually had something I already had planned that now wasn't happening. So I was feeling not good about that. And then I was replacing it with something that I wasn't as excited to do. But nowadays, if something happens, even unexpectedly, that where it's like, well, you could just do nothing right now if you want to, it's like, yeah, that's cool. I'll just do nothing. And it feels pretty good. I don't know why when I was younger, I didn't just enjoy doing nothing sometimes, but now I do.
So. Kids can get bored. Kids aren't necessarily as good at making their own fun, especially if they're alone. Yeah. Also, we get old and life seems crazy and hectic now. And that's the reason. So Wednesday, we had the whole all-day snowstorm. Mm-hmm. And we knew that was coming. Mm-hmm. So Trish had already planned to work home. From home that day. Mm-hmm. And I had a couple of appointments, and the businesses with whom I had those appointments were like, no,
yeah, right.
We won't be there. You shouldn't be there.
Yeah.
That morning, which was surprising. So we were just in, and I didn't worry about shoveling or whatever, cause I'm like, it's going to snow all day. And it did. It snowed all day,
all day.
And then I was like, okay, Thursday, cause Trish is going to be, she works from home Fridays, Saturday, Sunday, and then she's going to have Monday off. And so that was a big red. So she's like, you know, we'll get her back in one day into the office just so she can water plants. And also sometimes we like a little space or whatever. So it's fine. But the plan was I'm going to wake up and then I'm going to go shovel just enough so that we can get out before I take her to work. And then I'll take her to work and I'll come home and later I can shovel the rest or whatever. I've been noticing a lot of things that make me feel old lately, but a big one is I can't get moving as fast as I used
to. Oh gosh. Yeah. Yeah.
Like I'm still one of those, the alarm goes off and I usually can wake up right away.
Mm-hmm.
Although sometimes that's getting harder too, where I have to lay there for a minute and sort of figure out what's going on. But in terms of, I really got to sit down for a while. And so, yeah, I sat for like a half hour. And I got some caffeine in me and all this. And I was like, okay, we're going to get it to work. I'm going to have to go now and start shoveling. And I was just like, well, thank you. And so I went in the back and I was like, how'd you like to work from home today? And she's like, okay. And I did it later. And it wasn't that bad. The snow was very light and
powdery.
Dry. And yeah. So it took me like 20 minutes. I expected it to be like multiple trips where in between I take my albuterol inhaler and I'm like, yeah. It was like 20 minutes and I was tired, but it wasn't as bad as
Yeah. I enjoyed shoveling over the week too. That's something I like to do. And I was glad to have some snow on my birthday. So, you know, for me, I've probably talked about this before, but like, there's a 6 month period between the Iowa State Fair and my birthday, where all this stuff happens, like, you know, Halloween and Christmas and New Year's and all this stuff. And so that's like that's like my whole holiday season is that 6 month period from the fair to my birthday. So usually, so
now you've got this empty stretch of nothing.
Well, there's a lot of cool things. I mean, my grandkids' birthdays and my wife's birthday, but it's like, it's not the same general mood, and it's also more relaxed. Like that 6 months is full of expectation. Like, oh, I'm going to the fair. This is awesome. Oh, Halloween. Oh, Christmas. And these celebrations are like, you know, I don't have a lot of expectations. I don't have a lot of anticipation. I can just enjoy them for what they are. So I'm not even sure if I can say this 6 months is better or more fun than this. I mean, they're just different. And I think a lot of people experience, they talk about the holiday season, right? But for most people, it's not, they don't stretch it out over 6 months like I do. But so, a lot of times on my birthday, I'll kind of look back and say, well, what was it like? You know, how was the fair good? And was the Halloween season good? Did the leaf change? And I'm getting out in the leaves. And we were able to do that. And it was, you know, looking back, I was like, wow, this, everything really went really well this past 6 months. And also it's the first time, that's the first time I've had that 6 month period where I was a therapist, like a licensed therapist the whole time.
Yeah.
So it's like, wow, that, you know, that looks different looking back than any other time. So, so that was kind of cool that just to be able to sit and sort of reflect back. I mean, I think it's important for people to reflect on lots of different things, obviously, but you know, I don't know how often people talk about reflecting at the end of a year or whatever on a New Year's or whatever, but I'm not sure how often people do that, but I think it is a good thing to do. I think it does help you get some perspective on your life, figure out, you know, if you're going to make any changes for the time ahead. So, so I appreciated that this year, looking back that 6 months, like I pretty much always do, seeing a very different me than I'd seen before. And it was interesting. And it was interesting to, you know, talk to my wife about it and ask her what her experiences were and what she's been seeing, you know, in me and of me since August was the first full month that I was licensed. Like, you know, is it different around here? Am I different around here? Am I different just in general or whatever? Or did you experience those things different the way I did? And so, oh yeah, in some ways, yeah, in some ways, no. So that was an interesting thing about this birthday that I've never experienced before. And then on top of that, of course, you know, since my surgery back in 2021, all my birthdays have been different after that too. Right. Cause it's like, I know it's morbid, but every time my birthday comes around after that, it's like, well, this feels like a birthday that I wasn't even supposed to have. And so I'm a little more grateful for it, I think, than I used to be. So I don't know. Those are some interesting to me thoughts I had on my birthday this time around, different than other times.
Yeah.
How about you? How was your week?
Pretty bad. Everything's pretty bad right now. I am deep in the shitty time of year for me.
Oh, right.
But I am doing a lot of things to distract myself best I can. Weirdly, this Eternal Strands video game is becoming my winter game. I haven't even gone near Baldur's Gate 3 since then, and I'm really digging this one. I've got about 20 hours into it. I'm just having a good time. It's a good gameplay loop. I enjoy everything is real basic, real first game kind of vibe, but it just has just enough that's different and it fits it together in a way that I really like. Like, I've heard people say the characters and the story is sort of generic and boring, but the voice acting pulls it through for me and I'm really kind of involved with these characters and stuff.
Nice.
And yeah, just the gameplay loops are fun, so it's working well. I will definitely do Baldur's Gate 3, but now that I know more about it, it was a terrible idea for a winter game. It's not the right kind of game. But it's cool and I'll definitely revisit, but and then I've been watching so many movies. And I'm not sure where to start because I have a lot to go through and some of them are crazy. Let's get the simple one out of the way. Through the other night, watched Dark City. You remember Dark City?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I've seen that.
Came out the year before The Matrix, and really looks like The Matrix in a lot of ways, but with much more practical effects. Rufus Sewell, Kiefer Sutherland, Jennifer Connelly, and it's a weird noir thing. Oh, and William Hurt, weird noir thing where a guy lost his memory and there's weird shit going on and there's freaky pale skinned bald people in dark coats and hats manipulating things. And it's like a sci-fi vaguely horror-ish kind of thing. It doesn't entirely hold up. It's a neat idea. It's a neat idea, and there's fun stuff in it, and it's kind of unique, and that's cool. But yeah, its story is convoluted and doesn't hold together entirely super well and stuff. It was a fun time.
I don't remember it very much, but pretty sure I saw it.
It just feels sort of different than a lot of things, although there is weirdly a lot of Matrix in it, and I don't think either of them like cribbed from the other, but. There's a lot of stuff that's very similar in a lot of ways. But anyway, yeah, we watched that. All right, so we did two double features this week, and I need to talk about both of them. Would you like to know about when I actually went to the theater first, or would you like to know about our Nick Cage double?
Do the Nick Cage thing first, the theater thing. All right. Next.
We did a double header of Nick Cage.
Okay.
And we started with Con Air.
Con Air, yeah.
Classic. Which we had both seen long ago and remembered fondly. Although, as we started, I was like, I think all I remember about it is put the bunny back in the box. It's like the only thing. Hell of a cast. So many, like I remembered the big, I remember, you know, Cage is there, Cusack is there, Buscemi's there, Malkovich, but Ving Rhames is in there, Cole Meany is in there, Danny Trejo is in there, just a ton of people. It's fun. It's super fun. It's a good time. What I had not remembered or realized at the time is it's a very bad movie. It's dumb as shit. It is really, every line, every plot point is just so stupid. It's all so dumb. And it's also so, the repressed homoeroticism is amazing. It's a Bruckheimer produced thing, so of course that's there. But like, it's real stupid. But it's fun. It's still fun. It was a good time. But who cares about that? then we watched Vampire's Kiss.
Oh, I know. I haven't seen that.
No, very few people have. but you need to.
Oh, I need to. Why do I need to?
Yes.
I feel like everything you're about to say tells me why I shouldn't watch it.
No. This movie is Nicolas Cage's origin story.
Okay.
And I'm not even kidding here. I've looked into the making of this movie. This is not Nick Cage's first movie.
But okay.
This was done right after Moonstruck. He will say it himself. That crystallized his acting style that he has termed years ago and sticks with nouveau shamanic style of acting.
What? I've never heard that before. Nouveau? Yes,
that's what he calls it.
As in shaman? Shamanic. Like a shaman.
Yes. And nouveau, like the French word for new.
Okay. Yeah, I know that part, but it's like new. Was there an old shamanic?
That is what Nicolas Cage. That is what Nicolas Cage calls his style of acting.
But
not even making that up either. This is all true.
I'm so confused. I have so many questions.
But this is the movie where he really made it happen. It came out in 1988, and it was wildly unsuccessful. It is a movie where Nicolas Cage plays an executive at a literary agency. And he believes that I've heard it said that there's this sense of like what's really happening, like is this real or is this imagined? I watched this movie. I think it's pretty clear cut that it's not real. It's all in his head, but maybe not. He believes he brings home a woman one night and she's a vampire and she bites him, and he slowly is becoming a vampire.
Mm.
It is a comedy. It is a pitch black comedy. Like, messed up shit happens for laughs that is pretty messed up. But it is also the source of 60% of Nick Cage memes. If you ever see anything where his eyes are really wide and he's like grinning like an idiot, that's from Vampire's Kiss. Like, yeah, there's so many memes come off of this movie. The story of how it was made was crazy. The story of how Nick himself tried to Nick went to great lengths to try and essentially smuggle a live bat into this country for a scene involving a bat, because they had a mechanical bat and he didn't think it would be believable enough. It's insane, and it's one of the most Nick Cage things I've ever seen in my life. If you are a person who follows Nick Cage for good or for evil, this is the other bookend. Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent is at the end of your Nick Cage journey. You need to start it with a Vampire's Kiss. There is no better way to put it. This is Nick Cage, in quotes, like Nick Cage TM, the Nick Cage we all know. This is his origin, is in this movie. It's crazy.
I mean, you don't think people who see Raising Arizona or Moonstruck, you don't think they see the same Nick Cage?
I mean, it's in there.
Yeah.
But if you were to describe the features of a Nick Cage performance, a lot of them, this is the first place you really see. Okay. And mostly just the insanity. The absolute unhinged Cageness, and his again ability to create ridiculous accents that he also cannot manage to keep going all the time.
Oh,
that comes out here.
Okay.
And according to the origin, he's sort of doing a mid-Atlantic thing, according to like the director or whatever, and he really liked that he was doing that. But also, the rest of the internet, because I decided to look it up, was like, no, this is Nick Cage making up an accent. This is not a thing that exists in nature. And I agree. I thought it came off as kind of surfer dude. It's very weird. It's very, very weird. The movie is very weird. Like, again, if you have a vested interest in Nicolas Cage, you owe it to yourself to see this movie.
You know, I find mid-Atlantic accents kind of challenging. It can slip too easily into three or four other things.
All of my accents slowly morph into one of two. Every single, whatever I start with, I know this because I GM and I do a lot of accents there or whatever, and they always slowly morph into one of two things. One, Inigo Montoya.
Yeah.
And two is old Jewish lady.
Old Jewish lady. Now, come on. Even when you do try to do something British?
Eventually, yeah.
Yeah, okay, well.
It'll get there. Although I will say, British is... I've got a fair bit of experience with British. If I don't push too hard, if I do a real mild sort of received pronunciation, BBC English version, I can hold that for a while. But most anything else... including when I'm just trying to imitate a character that already exists with an accent. Like,
right.
The Bronson Pinchot character of Serge from the Beverly Hills Cop movies, that exact character has made his way into many of my role-playing campaigns. And I do the accent pretty well. If he's in a scene for too long, he eventually turns into an Inigo Montoya. I think there are other accents that I could do more consistently, but they are not accents that I'm willing to ever try. Like, I think there's a few that I could do, but I don't want to. Like, yeah, no, I could definitely pull out a couple that would be authentic to the horrible stereotypes attached. But all right. Yeah, Vampire's Kiss is very important to my
Okay.
people. We had a different doubleheader, and it wasn't really a doubleheader. We just happened to watch two movies that day. We went to the theater and saw Love Hurts on what was both its opening weekend and the opening weekend of the new Captain America movie.
Oh, I forgot that was opening again for
It
that.
was playing in one theater. It was the last theater in the building, which is probably not a good sign. I don't think it is doing well commercially or critically,
Which Love
but
Hurts or?
yes, Love Hurts. I Captain America, I'm less sure, but I also don't care. As we all know, I was very excited to see this. Ke-Huy Quan, very cute, successful realtor, but it turns out he has a past as a badass, and hijinks ensue. Is bad.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying. There are things I like about it. Some of the action is really cool. It's not very gritty. There's a lot of like people, there's clear wire work and stuff of people being flung around or whatever, but it's fun. It's some good action scenes. And some of the funny bits are quite funny. There are a couple of side characters that are a couple of hitmen, and one of them is played by Marshawn Lynch, the football player, and one of them by an actor I don't know. And I'm discovering I love Marshawn Lynch in everything. He only just plays himself, but it's fun to watch him. But the two of them are sort of hitmen who are on the periphery of this, and they get these fun scenes where they discuss their marriage problems and stuff like that. And that can be kind of cute. And there's some weird little things, but mostly it's awful. It feels incredibly chopped up. I think some shit happened with it. But the big one, the biggest one, is I think this may be a movie that gets studied in film classes.
What is that?
Because it is the most obvious, heavy, like it is the best example in the world of why Tell Don't Show sucks. Most of this movie's plot is told to us. And I mean, to the degree that there are two characters who are supposed to be in love, and they don't seem in love at all, but a voiceover told us they were. There's a thing where somebody is mad at somebody because they ruined their life, and they're like, no, you weren't happy there. You didn't want that. You want this. And they seemed extremely happy. We got no indication they were not happy, except the voiceover told us, oh, they were right. I wasn't happy living like that. But you seem very happy. Like, I don't. And it's, yeah, we mostly get Ke-Huy Quan's inner monologue, and then sometimes the female lead's inner monologue, who they're in love, they have zero chemistry. Zero chemistry. But we know they're in love because we hear it in a voiceover. Yeah, it's, I feel very bad for it. I feel very bad for Ke-Huy Quan. Because I really want him to be in more stuff and be successful. And he does great with what he has, but yeah, it's just choppy in a weird way. And I'll tell you what, if you go and you watch the pitch meeting for it, it's that. They pretty accurately hit this one. But also in the process, I realized I don't think I ever need to go to a movie theater anymore.
I was going to ask about that.
Every aspect of it was worse than just being able to be at home. There was weird convoluted shit dealing with the ticket purchases and the concessions and all that, which was odd. I will admit the popcorn was very tasty. The seat was less comfortable. I couldn't pause it. It started and we got our first voiceover. And I was like, what's wrong with the captions? And then I remembered where I was. But it also is an 82-minute movie. I would say conservatively we had 20 to 30 minutes of trailers, which were all terrible because they were all trailers that made me go, well, I need to know a lot more about what this movie's about. Like they were all, it was like they were all teasers or something. Everyone, I was like, oh, that was a lot of lights and sound. I don't really know what you're going for, so I don't know if I'm interested. But also just a lot of straight up commercials.
Yeah.
And oh my God. Every time I talk about this, I forget this part, but I tell people. Marcus Cinemas. Mm-hmm. Our local cinemas are Marcus Cinemas, owned by the Marcus family. There's a dude named, I don't know what, Marcus, and he likes to show up before movies and thank you for being there.
Yeah.
And they are, it is always the sweatiest delivery ever.
Yeah, cringy like, is what not the kids an would actor. Say. Yeah, yeah.
He's not, what would the kids say?
Cringy, it's cringy. It's cringe.
It's quite cringy.
Yeah.
And not in like it's not offensive or anything. It's just like he's not an actor. It feels weird.
You're embarrassed for him, kind of.
Yes. Oh man, it got worse.
How? How could it ever get worse? Like I think they know it's that way and they're trying to lean into it and like, you know, but it doesn't really work.
No. This what happened proves to me that they have no idea.
Oh, they have no idea. Okay.
Yeah, because so what happens is we're watching all this stuff. At this point, I'm getting genuinely irritated. I'm like, when is the movie actually starting? We've said silence your phones. We've said feature presentation several times. Nope, more shit. And then he shows up and I'm like, God damn it. Yes, thank you for giving us your money. Move on. Let's go. Whatever. And he's like, hi, I can't remember. I'm Roger Marcus III, Jr., whatever. It's a great time here. And I'm super excited to announce this thing. Take it away, Zach. And what we – I won't go through B by B. What we have are in physical space four people seated together, of which Marcus Jr., the Jr. Third or whatever, is on this end. Sitting next to him is actor Zachary Levi.
Oh. Well, that's weird.
Yes, isn't it just?
Yeah, that's...
He's here because he is super excited to announce a new movie coming out called The Unbreakable Boy.
Oh, yeah, he does have that coming out.
Yes, and is based on a book written by a dude who raised an autistic kid. And it's super, super heartwarming.
I mean,
and we just think you'll love it and it'll have something for everyone. And in the two seats next to him, on the far end, is the dad who wrote the book upon which they have based the movie. And then in between the two of them is the autistic son, who's now an adult, wearing a weird jester's hat that I assumed he just wanted to wear.
I've seen previews of this film, and the little kid version of him wears that.
Yeah, well, now the big version does, and also has a goatee.
Okay. I don't know.
And he's just sort of there, and they talk about how he actually works at a Marcus Cinema.
Oh.
And then they do this weird patronizing shit of like how he's like the CEO tells him he's like one of the best employees they have. And I'm just like, I don't know if it's true. I do know there's no way you'd know that as the CEO. That this is one of your best ushers. And it's just, and I'm sorry that this doesn't mean anything to anyone who doesn't live near Marcus Cinema, but all of it has that same level of discomfort, of awkwardness.
Yeah.
Throughout, even Zachary Levi. And to be fair, Zachary Levi has matured into the biggest bundle of awkwardness ever. I feel really bad for him because he is constantly, he clearly has some serious mental health issues that he struggles with, and I think he's open about. He has some fairly strong religious beliefs, which occasionally butt heads against the public in weird ways. And he's really just on a run of movies not making a lot of money. And so I think it must be just very stressful to be him right now. And this did not help the case. Like, oh, and we had this for that movie that's coming out this coming weekend, like tomorrow, like today. It's coming out today when we're recording this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, why didn't you just have a trailer? Like a normal ass movie trailer. Instead of this, because we didn't, there wasn't a movie trailer in addition. It was just this.
So the hook or the angle there was that, oh, this kid actually works for us. That was kind of their.
If it was, they buried the lead. They said that near the end. The hook is that it's super inspiring and it's just beautiful.
Well,
and everybody's gonna love it.
That is so odd that they would. Like I can it's since okay if they realized oh this movie is about someone who you know they work at one of our theaters that's kind of cool, I can see someone thinking hey, I can see someone coming up with the idea because people come up with dumb ideas all the time
and maybe that is what happened I don't know
but why wouldn't someone say that's a terrible idea because first of all these things are so cringy you know you're right they must not know that they must think. People enjoy them or something?
Yeah, it's just it just.
But to promote a movie, weird. They've never done that before.
And for the record, don't know this movie. Could be a great movie. Don't plan to see it. But it's also not my kind of movie, so it could be awesome. I don't know.
Well, right,
it's
but I mean, what,
such what, a weird, and it feels very. Christian film kind of thing, and let me explain. Not in the sense that I think it is Christian, but like when they make certain like Christian conservative films or whatever, they often sort of find niche ways to appeal because they know we have a very specific demographic and they're the only ones that we're going to get to go see it. So we like appeal to them in ways that you wouldn't necessarily appeal. It feels like that. Mm. It feels like they've sort of already said, most people aren't going to see this. We're going to appeal to the kind who will think this is adorable. I guess. I don't know. That's the energy I'm getting off.
Okay. But I mean, like, there are all kinds of reasons to, like, business reasons to think maybe this isn't a good idea. Like, you're promoting a film in this. They've never done that before. And presumably because they're a theater, which lots of films are in this theater made by lots of different companies. Now what? Is someone going to say, hey, Marcus, since you did this with this film, we've got a film and we'll pay you this much money if you promote our film in your little thing. I mean, they can say no, but it's like, I don't know. I think I just wouldn't have done
Saw
that.
Saw 11.
Okay, so now you're making it sound interesting.
based on the book written by the father of the Jigsaw Killer. And he's here with us now, along with Tobin Bell in a jester hat.
I mean,
I'm Chris Rock. Thank you very much.
That sounds funny. I don't know.
It was just weird. But all right, let's set that aside. We're going to run long because I do want to get an email, but I have to talk about this last thing.
Okay.
Because that night we went home and I really hope you're going to know what I'm talking about because I'm really tired of dropping what I think is a big bombshell. And then everybody's like, what's that? So after much deliberation on my part, for weeks, I finally decided I did actually want to see it. And Trish and I sat down and paid a couple bucks to watch Heretic. You don't know what I'm talking about.
Well,
God,
I know.
I
think I've seen it, and I'm trying to remember what about it you wouldn't want to see it.
Well, I'll put it to you this way. Based on the trailers, it's a movie where Hugh Grant abducts and torments two young girls who are Mormon missionaries.
Oh, no, we haven't. We've only heard about that. But yes, yeah. I know what it is. We also haven't seen it, but now I know why you wouldn't want to see it. Well, yeah. Why didn't you see it?
Well, because the people are talking about it.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
And they're like, it's not what you think it is.
Oh, see, all I've seen is a preview, and it comes up to see, yeah. You know, on the TV sometimes, like, well, we're not probably interested in that.
Yeah, exactly. But people are like, no, it's a movie about the nature of belief and the nature of faith and what that means. And it's dark, it's scary in places. But it is more interesting than just a standard bad guy torments girls kind of movie. I'm definitely glad I saw it, and I think it is a very good movie. Here's the thing, because I've been looking at, now that I've seen it, I've been watching some more other critical analysis of it, because it won't spoil anything or whatever. It is a movie that is very heavily open to interpretation. Both in terms of what happens in some places. There are places where it could be unreliable narration in some places. But mostly it's a lot of, like, some people find the movie quite offensive on behalf of Latter-day Saints, and then other people who are members of the Latter-day Saints community are like, no, this is fine. It's, I will tell you up front, it didn't have to be Latter-day Saints. But I think there's a, and it's not about that. Like, they do talk about it. They do argue about some of the history, but that's not the movie is not about the Mormon faith.
Okay.
The movie uses, and the Mormon faith is a very good one to use because, first of all, it is one that goes door to door proselytizing.
Right.
And it is also one that is sort of mainstream enough that everybody knows of it, but it is still looked at. Like, there's a lot of people who are like, that's not mainstream Christianity. That's its own weird thing, which makes it good here. It also is the subject of a lot of controversy built a lot around misinformation. A lot of people know some things about Mormons, but don't really know things about Mormons. And so it just, like, if Scientologists went door to door, you probably could have used Scientology. It's that, like, it's... It just fits the mold for this plot point, but there's nothing magical or specific about LDS. This movie's not about Latter-day Saints. It just needed a faith that was sort of fit the mold here, and this does. It has some unbelievably good performances, especially Hugh Grant, because it is also... Religious belief is a thing, but there's also a huge component of the social contract, because there's this whole thing where, like, theoretically, maybe they could have gotten out of it sooner, but it was socially awkward and stuff like that. And also just times where they trusted what he said based on nothing, and it turned out, like, there's a lot of interesting stuff about that building. But Trish even said afterwards, because we were talking, this is the thing, this is a movie that we've talked about a lot afterwards, and not in a way of like, this movie sucked, like, no, it's just brought up interesting things. But, like, she was saying, like, I get that that's awkward, and we specifically went with young women because that can be more, it can be more intimidating with a man to break these social boundaries. But she's like, but I mean, he was really kind of real obviously sketchy or whatever. I'm like, yes, but he was also remarkably charming, even as he was being creepy. And only Hugh Grant, I think, could have done that. This is such a game changer role for him. And he's amazing because he's a creepy motherfucker who's really still kind of like, I don't know that I would have made the same decisions, but I get it because he's just not. He's Hugh Grant. Think about Hugh Grant. He's charming as shit. And he always has been. But in this one, he's also super creepy and scary and stuff. It's interesting. I will say this. There is a section that heavily features going through the history of the game Monopoly. And while it is technically accurate, it misses some very valuable points that I think are useful for people to know about the history of Monopoly. They don't necessarily detract from the point that they're making in the movie. But I as a true believer in the history of Monopoly, which is fascinating, I feel like they left out some critical details here.
Okay.
But also the two, I mean, there's other minor characters. There's also Hugh Grant and these two women, and they all do really well. And it's very interesting, the dynamic of the two girls that you get first off and how that sort of shifts. And a lot of, for all three of them, you thought you knew what the character was, and then it sort of isn't what you think it is. And that's kind of fun. I don't know. I think it's a very worthwhile movie. If you are LDS and you are not comfortable with questioning your faith a little, like, I don't think this movie decries the Mormon faith. I don't think it argues against it or anything. And I don't think it makes fun of it. It does bring up some things that aren't great about the history of the faith, and it does ask some questions. And for some people, that's a problem. For some people, it's not. I, as somebody who does not believe in LDS, but grew up surrounded by it, so I have sort of a lot of sympathy for the rank and file members of the LDS community, I was not offended on their behalf, and I get offended on their behalf. I still am not a big fan. I won't see Book of Mormon. Just because I'm like, I don't even think I've read up on this plot or whatever, and I'm like, I don't think it's particularly rough, but it is just sort of pointlessly dragging our faith in a weird way that I don't, and just I also think Parker and Stone are just too obsessed with LDS, but whatever. But I didn't feel this way about this. Your mileage may vary. I think I recommend it, though. Again, if that kind of thing seems interesting to you. It's not particularly gory. It does have some gross bits. And it's definitely not a happy story. It's not. It does bummer out pretty much at the end. But yeah. I mean, I could tolerate it. So that should give you some perspective. All right. Do an email.
Okay.
Do one of those.
This is from Azure Talon. And there's a picture.
All right. I have not seen this, so you're gonna have to do your best to describe.
The email says, "My dudes, behold, worst tattoo ever or best." Azure Talon displaying things I actually send people and don't. Okay, so I'm going to look at the photo. So the picture is, looks like it might be from a X post or something, and it says biggest regret of the tattoo, basically. And the tattoo is, there's a man, and he's shirtless. The tattoo is the man. Sorry, I'm not talking about the tattoo yet. I'm just talking about the picture. The picture is of a man, and he's shirtless, and the tattoo is on his neck and a little bit of his neck, just like the bottom of his neck and his chest. And I don't know what it. I can't. Okay. So it's from. It's a tattoo sort of I'm pretty sure it's representing Master Blaster
in Beyond Thunderdome.
Yeah. It's Master Blaster, and he rides someone.
No, Master rides Blaster.
Oh, Master rides Blaster. Okay, so the tattoo makes it look like the guy's actual head is Master and his body is Blaster. So next to his neck, there's like arms, I guess. And he's holding some kind of handle. And then there's a thing there. It looks like he's driving himself, really, I guess, now that I think about it. But it makes me think of Master Blaster. I don't know why anybody would get a tattoo like this. But
this is highly unprecedented, but you suck at this so bad.
I know.
I have to go look at this picture.
So, like, imagine like if
I'm just worried it's 100% not what you think is.
Imagine if like from here up my head and removed, and then a smaller person with my head was put in the hole and could drive me around.
Yes. It is drawn such that it looks like his neck leads into a much smaller body, and then there's sort of a frame around it and implies that he is piloting his larger body. It has absolutely nothing to do with Beyond Thunderdome.
It looks like it, though, doesn't it?
Well,
except Blaster has his own head, I guess, so.
Yes, it does, not in a way that is remotely helpful for describing the picture.
Okay! So this is why two things shouldn't be happening. I shouldn't be reading emails.
People who know Beyond Thunderdome looking at that would be like, oh yeah, I see what you meant. But people just listening to you would in no way get an accurate picture based on you referencing that.
This is why I shouldn't read these things.
He's
in the basically, first place.
Yeah, he's got a tattoo that there's just a couple little arms here. And then there's like a chest in between. So it looks like his head is on a tiny body. And then like his actual body is a suit that he's piloting.
Whatever. Why would someone get that? Of course, I mean, I don't have any tattoos.
I mean, it looks pretty cool. I like it. I wouldn't get it.
I mean, here's the thing though. You see that and you think this person really planned this out. They really gave it some thought. Some artist probably drew it for. I mean, this wasn't an accident. This wasn't, oh, I'm drunk and I'm going to go get a tattoo. This was someone's
multiple sessions.
Yeah. And so I don't know.
The older I get, the more I am into I don't want to say tattoo culture, but the mindset by which people get tattoos and what they mean. Because my whole life, I always liked tattoos. I always wanted to get a tattoo. But I could never come up with anything that I would trust I wouldn't hate later. I'm like, can you come up with something you want to stick on your body that 40 years from now you're going to be like, that's still cool? It seems, especially for me, seems unlikely. So I didn't do it, and I didn't do it. And then eventually I realized for a lot of people that's sort of the point. It is a snapshot in time, and the imperfections and the regrets are part of the experience to look back later and be like, I was really into that at the time, or like, it looks a little wonky in places and it's sagged over the years, depending on where it is or whatever, but it's like putting a memory on yourself or whatever. It's just a little snapshot of thing. I used to think of it purely as a decoration, but like, I don't know if you're willing to just go, if you're willing to treat your body as just sort of a doodle canvas, and some people are, you can make some cool stuff. And like, if you live a life, which is entirely possible, where you're not in a lot of situations where people are going to be like scandalized by that, that's a cool tattoo. Like, you're just the dude who has, like, people will always remember you. You'll stand out. It's probably a hell of a story. especially when you're an old guy in the nursing home. And you're like, let me tell you why I got this thing. Did you ever see a movie called Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome? Well, I never did, but one time somebody described a little bit of it to me, and that it does.
Badly.
This guy named William was like,
right.
And I was like, that's awesome. I'm getting that tattooed on my chest right now.
I could just think of scenarios where he'd want to take his shirt off in the presence of others, maybe only one other. And this is not the impression he wants to make.
Yeah, I mean,
like, oh man,
this
I
is
really don't
definitely
want to take my
one
shirt off,
of those things that needs to be discussed before things get to that point. Like, you do not want to spring that on someone in a moment of passion.
Or sure. Or like even if like, oh, I'm meeting that person's family and we're going swimming at the ocean and oh no.
No, again, I'm not saying
I have to take my shirt off. This is terrible.
But no, this is you warn people. Literally, I'm being very serious about this. My family members.
How do you warn people?
My family members sometimes have to warn people that their son-in-law is going to show up in a dress.
Okay, but like, what do you say about
and
this?
That's
though?
The thing, because they're like, these people are weird like this. And they don't tell me don't wear one, except at a Catholic funeral. But they do tell people, oh, like, just so you know, because you secretly seem like somebody who might be weirded out by this. He's probably going to show up in a caftan.
Right, but what I'm talking about here is you don't just say, hey, he's got a tattoo, so don't be freaked out. You've got to say, so this tattoo...
Oh, yeah. He's got a fucked up tattoo. And then the parents are like, well, what are you doing with him? Like, no. It's not offensive. He hasn't got, like, a swear word or a flaming skull or whatever. It's just weird as shit. Nothing wrong with it. It's not, it doesn't secret, you don't need to look it up on Urban Dictionary. It's just weird. It's a silly cartoon thing that he has indelibly put on his body
that you will have a response to of some kind. You'll laugh you'll be really confused,
but that's on you. Your response is your response. I am dating him. I knew about this before we went to bed because he's not an idiot. I love him. I love the tattoo. I love him not just despite the tattoo. I love him because of the tattoo. So mom, dad, get on board with my tiny little boyfriend piloting a much bigger man.
I think we're all getting the point of why someone would regret
you're
that.
Not losing a daughter, you're gaining a very small son and an incredibly advanced mech suit.
Yeah, these are all the reasons why this was a really bad idea.
No, this was a great idea. I am talking myself into it. I might have to go get one of these now. This
terrible
is awesome
idea.
This is where I want a movie where this is the emotional climax of, you know what, mom, dad? Yeah. He's tattooed himself to look like a tiny person inside a normal sized person. And I get that that's not the world you grew up in. But you know what? I love him, and I don't just love him as a person. I love him as a tiny person piloting a much bigger person. And if you don't get that, maybe you don't get me. So I hope you'll be at the wedding.
Oh, my God.
Where, but if you're not, I'm still going to marry my tiny love. And he's still going to be wearing the big mech suit. Because as we all know, it's just a tattoo and he's not really tiny. I hope you get that, mom and dad. He's not really tiny. He's normal size. It's just tattoo work.
Oh, man.
Get over yourself.
And then
Jeez.
he shows up at the wedding with a tuxedo that's cut low so you can see the tattoo. And then there's a little tuxedo.
The little tuxedo. And that part is tattooed. Oh, my God. He tattooed the little tuxedo on the little guy.
Oh, no.
The little guy just has a tattoo of a tuxedo now. And now he's got two stories. Whatever the fucking story was that got him to get the tattoo. And then the lovely story about, for the love of his life, he put him in a tuxedo. This is great. This guy's my hero now. I love this guy.
Oh, no.
I love this guy.
Oh, man.
As you're telling, in answer to your question, best tattoo ever. I love it. I want to marry this man.
Why?
I want to introduce him to my mom. Who legitimately would be like, that's fucking weird. Didn't you already have a wife? But whatever.
Oh, man.
Like, my mom would not be, like, bothered. Like, she'd be like, that's weird, but she'd be too weird. All right. Shall we do our side quest for the week?
Yeah.
People need to know what to do while they're not listening to us. Well, I'll tell you, you've got some permanent side quests. Go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, and tell us your thoughts on all this crap we've talked about. Email us, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Do that. But that's just all the time you should do that. Here's something for you to do now. Pick a number between 1 and 138.
135.
All right. I'm not doing anything with that. I just wanted you to say it. I already picked this one.
Oh.
Wow. This one's controversial.
Oh.
To me. Read by candlelight. That can fuck up your eyes. I don't think that puts some eye strain. Doing things in general by candlelight. Yeah, I'm into that. But all right. The quote here was from Yoda again.
Whoa.
You think I can do it?
Well, it'll turn into Inigo Montoya. That's what we know.
In a dark place, we find ourselves, and a little more knowledge lights our way, you son of a bitch. Famously, Yoda said that.
Nice. Oh my God, that's hilarious.
But the reading by candlelight reminds me of one of the all-time great classic jokes.
What's that?
Outside, sorry.
Did you forget it or what?
I did. I got the end. I forgot the setup.
Oh, okay.
Outside of a dog, a book is a man's best friend. Inside of a dog, it's way too dark to read.
That's a good one.
I think that might be a Marx Brothers one. Sure. It's an old one, though. It's a definite oldie, but goodie. Reading by candlelight made me think of that. Because, I don't know, in my head I always have this image of somebody inside of a dog like trying to light a match to read by. Maybe that was from some cartoon I saw or something. Anyway, read by candlelight at your own risk. And also, don't ever doubt change.org again. And also, tattoo little arms and stuff on top of you because best tattoo ever.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech www.mexicanpizza.com.